For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This is Drop Tent Media Network.
You have an awesome horror movie coming out that you are in, and I'm very excited to hear about it.
It's actually Popeye the Slayer Man.
Slayer.
Like, this is a cult that I, Sean, would actually have, or like, yeah, the hypothetical best cult. First rule that I would have, whatever other rules come up, they're flexible.
Hi, hello, welcome, Call the Bus, Neil Wood.
Wood. By the renewing of your mind.
Call the Bus.
The recycling. It's a flesh body world.
You're going to love it. And we might try to recruit you.
Human.
Comedian out of Philadelphia.
Reptilian.
There we go. Another day in the cult. I'm comedian Neil Wood. I'm here with the wonderful Sean Michael Conway. I hope I'm allowed to use your middle name.
That's perfect.
Perfect. actor, comedian. He's fantastic. We're just bonded over the fact that we both sort of missed the fun horror things that we were into when he was over here on the East Coast, because he's over there in LA now in California doing stuff. But Sean, how are you today, buddy?
I'm great, man. Getting super excited for my film coming out. A lot of cool stuff with acting. Yes. And it drives me crazy that we didn't actually get the bond over horror.
I know.
How did we miss that?
I know. Running around, there's 200 comics, and you know, I know there's even a bigger scene in LA and stuff like that too. So a lot of times, and I feel remiss that we didn't. But you do have an awesome horror movie coming out that you are in, and I'm very excited to hear about it. Talk about it. And I mean, the full title, I believe it's just Popeye, correct?
It's actually Popeye the Slayer Man.
Slayer Mast. Man, I love that the IPs get released, dude, and you just get to have. I see, like I told you before a little bit off air, I did Winnie the Pooh. I'm doing all of them. I'm glad they're making another one. I'm like, I don't even care. They're fun. It's great. It's a great time.
You know the whole Pooniverse now, right, that they're making? So they've got Bambi. They've got Peter Pan.
Yep.
They've got Steamboat Willie. Mickey Mouse, I don't think, is public domain yet.
No.
But the Bambi one actually doesn't look bad.
Yeah. No, they know what they are, and they're having fun with it. They're like, yeah, whatever. It's released IP, so we'll just we'll do what we want.
I mean, say what you want, but you know, such a low budget, these guys, they can make something cool. Like the Winnie the Pooh has some iconic moments.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. I mean, horror people talk about it, I think, more than anyone else, of the practical effects and like where budget goes, because you see it right on screen, especially in a low budget situation. They go for practical. Sometimes it's just cheap. They don't have the money for visual effects a lot of the time. Sometimes they do. But like, it's funny that it goes back to the stuff that some of the best. The Thing is a perfect example of,
right,
like, how practical can just go. So I love when sometimes on a budget, you just get a great, fun movie.
Yeah. Same thing with like Evil Dead. I mean, I'm a huge fan of practical effects, even if they don't look perfect, because they're just so fun. And Popeye is all practical.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And they're great. The guy who worked with us, his name's RJ. I can't think of his last name, but this dude is great. He also loved Creepshow. So I'm rocking a Creepshow shirt right now.
Oh, yeah.
Huge fan. But this guy, he's the best. He worked with like Troma, the guys who made Toxic Avenger and all those indie horror films.
Yes. Yeah. Gotta get a Troma in there. Every once in a while, I'll meet somebody who's like more into modern horror or something. I be like, oh, you don't know about Troma. <They're> like trauma? I'm like, no.
Troma. No.
You gotta get on some Tromas, dude.
When I was a kid, my grandma, she died when I was like six, so I have very few memories of her. What I do remember is she used to introduce me to like indie horror films.
Oh.
Like I remember watching Puppet Master with my grandmother.
Damn.
Like Full Moon Picture shit.
that's a cool grandmom, dude.
Yeah. And at the time, I didn't even think that that was like bizarre.
Sure.
You know, and now looking back, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, my grandmom, very Catholic. That'd be amazing. Obviously, she would never seen a horror movie in her entire life. I think my aunts, her daughters, obviously still like talk about going to see The Exorcist, which I believe my grandmother never saw, but they were so freaked out that, you know, they slept with crucifix that night. And, you know, you had priests coming to our house and stuff. And like one time they were talking about exorcisms and stuff. Like, they were so freaked out by just that. I don't think, like, that's awesome, dude. What a cool grandma.
That's incredible.
So you were being shown some very cool stuff by a matriarch of your family very early.
Yeah. When I was a kid, so I had my grandmother showing me indie horror films like that and Cabin by the Lake with Judd Nelson. And then when I was, I remember I was like 4 or 5, it was like one of the first times I can remember being babysat by a cousin of mine. She showed us Children of the Corn 3. And from there, it was just constant. Like, we were just addicted. Between my brother, my cousin, and I, we were watching like all those free movies that were on Comcast and Verizon. So you had like Midnight Meat Train, Hard Candy. I mean, shit that was like actually like indie horror.
Yeah.
And I remember we had this babysitter who would come over, and we would always trick her into watching horror movies with us. You know, like a movie like Hard Candy. Like, yeah, it's a kid's movie about, like, you know, sweets. And she watched it and we're like, what is this? And she also, very Catholic, was just not, she wouldn't even say Lord. It's like, oh my word.
Jeez. Oh. Love that you're sneaking stuff under the radar that way. I feel like I did not. Oh man, I would have loved to have that. That's, I mean, especially Hard Candy is like, my mom would have, people in my family would have been like, what? Turn this off. This is insane that we're watching this with you. That's insane. But I loved it. That's fantastic, man. I mean, so obviously, you know, you're on Cult of Us. This is a fight, you know, but, you know, so we'll get into some of this stuff, but I still want to hear like a little bit more about, because I'm such a horror nerd especially, but like, yeah, so you're, I know, again, can't talk crazy. I'm not trying to get you in trouble, obviously. So
now you're good.
But yeah. What were some of your experiences? So you know, we talked, it's a little practical going on. There's practical going on. It's a great thing. Like what was your experience overall?
So I'll give a little, background as to how I started working with this team. So when I was in Philly first when I met all of these filmmakers. Some of them are from New York and some of them are from LA, but I booked a film with them called Ouija Witch, which, you know, when I first booked it, I was a little worried, mostly by the title. I had great experiences with indie films. I knew that lots of indie filmmakers had been burned by projects, you know, because some people never had the money or it turns into some scam. And I was worried, like, is this the one, man? Is this the one that's going to get me? And I couldn't have been more wrong. The team was fantastic. We worked in upstate New York. It was the easiest shoot I ever done. Everything was so organized. It also was the first Deadline article that I was featured in. And it was a way for me to get my first manager through one of the other actors.
Wow.
So then cut to, I moved to LA and I'm really close with a lot of the LA filmmakers from this team. And they hit me up and were like, hey man, we're doing this new film and we want you to star in it. Like, oh my God. You know, it's just like, it's crazy. You never know where you're going to get an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And when I came back to set, it was 2 years later after Ouija Witch and everyone upped their game. I mean, the talent was better. All the actors had grown. I had grown. The producers were stronger. The writing was like just so good for a script about Popeye,
right.
You know, a horror movie. It was funny. It's fast paced. And like the cinematography was sharper. It was just beautiful to be there on set. But even that, you know, couldn't predict where we are now, which, you know, we're looking at a limited theatrical release, which was kind of the dream at the time. But even when we were on set, we knew that we were making something great. I mean, the practical effects were insane. I was on for most of the days, but even when I was off, I would come to set because I just wanted to watch some crazy shit happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd have to. I would. You'd have to do it. it's one of those things where, so you're up with the team and yeah, you're right there. You don't know where an opportunity is going to come. And I feel like so many times, especially in like entertainment of any kind, you know, you meet a good team and you're kind of like, man, I hope I work with them more. Like I hope this, yeah, comes. So that's beautiful that they had. I'm wondering, I mean, starring in too. I mean, is this your first starring role, technically?
Not technically. I starred in this Liquid Death film.
Right.
It technically wasn't a feature film though. It was about 45 minutes.
Gotcha.
But I starred in that. This would be technically the first feature film I star in. So I guess so.
Yeah. Well, this is such a beautiful thing because I hope I don't listen. If you don't like horror, you know that I like horror, but for the fans out there that aren't as horror bound, it's still amazing. Cause think about it this way. Terrifier, which is out, and you know, Damon Leone and stuff like that kicking off, like has now a horror franchise that was very much like something that kicked off in this way. You know, I mean, he just wanted to make a movie and it was done, you know, on a low, you know, what we consider a low budget, which again, I feel like people hear low budget sometimes or like a smaller budget film and they're like, and I'm like, dude, sometimes people are given millions of dollars to make something.
Yeah.
And it is awful.
Right.
So,
you know, Terrifiers, they're based in New Jersey, right?
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I'm fully in. That's why I'm thinking about these people who are outside of horror, especially with, you know, outside of indie horror of like Pooh and, you know, all these, Popeye and we're going into Steamboat Willie and stuff. They're just like, what the hell? They're making a horror movie about what? And I'm like, it's fine. It's not for you. We understand. But like, this is where sometimes you get to kick off. And now Art the Clown is a solidified character, if not one of the more interesting and original new modern horror monsters to come out of an indie film, and now in a national way, like, I mean, huge release, like this stuff like that. So I'm very excited for you, brother, because that is,
thanks man,
that's huge. And I'm sure you, and I know you know that, like, it's funny sometimes, but how many actors of course start in horror, right? Like,
so many directors. I mean, you know, you mentioned Damien Leone, but like Sam Raimi, like James Cameron, I think did like Piranha 2 or something.
Yeah.
David Fincher did Aliens.
James Wan. Yeah, of course.
So many people. Yeah, James Wan. Oh my God. The whole like making of Saw is like a groundwork for me an artist.
Yeah, we just watched the entire thing. Me and my partner, did the whole way through, and I had probably dropped out of Saw, probably somewhere after the third. I don't think I had checked out 4 or 5, and I know people are gonna fight on the canonical versions of how these things work. That's not important. Mm-hmm. It's Saw. It's fun. Stop being weird.
Exactly.
So you're probably I'm ecstatic for you, and that's huge. Was the best day on set? When did you have a day on set you were like, that was an amazing day? If you had to pick one.
They really are all so great. I mean, I think that they kept ramping up because we got the days that we weren't in the factory out of the way early, and then we spent the remainder of the shoot in the factory, so a lot of night shoots. For those of you who don't know, Popeye the Slayer Man is about a group of college kids who film a documentary in an abandoned spinach factory. And there is, of course, this legend that somebody is in there dicing people up. And lo and behold, it's Popeye. But but we filmed, for the most part, inside of the factory at night. And I can't quite remember which day was which, but if I just had to hypothetically choose a day, I would just say the day where we had the most practical effects.
Yeah.
You know, the most practical kills. And honestly, I may not even have been acting that day.
Right.
It was still the best day for me. I mean, seeing RJ's work was just incredible. And seeing Jason Stevens, who plays Popeye, in the outfit, like putting it on. I mean, the dude's already jacked as is, but then you see him in the costume and his arms are huge. And I mean, he's like 6 feet tall. It's, It's just amazing.
This is going to be, yeah, I'm so excited to watch this. Okay. Sorry. I get very excited for new horror movies. So that's my thing. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, I have, you know, a little bit of, is there anything else? I feel like I don't know what I don't know. So it's like one of those things where I know obviously as the actor and stuff, like, you know, movies coming out, you can't like give crazy amounts away, or, you know, there's certain things you can't talk about possibly. So,
yeah,
but it's interesting having an actor on because, you know, this podcast, I like to talk about cults overall and, you know, manipulation, even day to day stuff. And like, you know, how many times we think that we're being persuaded to do something when you're like, I kind of didn't even want to do that day, you know, whatever it might be. They're like, I don't know. How did I get here? Did I get to this party by my own free will? Do I remember that? You know, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah. But, well, I mean, that's of course huge in Hollywood, right? Doing so many things you don't want to do. I mean, you know, what's nice about this team is that they've kind of built their own business outside of the Hollywood system, nice. Right? Like, they're not dependent upon studios and big budgets, right? Where there's a lot at stake and you can't risk certain things. Mm. Like, I think that's a problem with a lot of big filmmakers is once they, you know, they're known for their early work, which when they had no budget, and then they're given a budget, but then they're given less freedom. So then you blame them when their film is bad, but really it's not their fault. It's just that their hands are tied.
Yep.
So you have to like play that balance. And, you know, working with like, you know, the producer on this project, Jeff Miller, and the director, Robert Michael Ryan, these guys have really just like found something. And the team in New York, they're in upstate New York, Oneonta, New York, to be exact. They were in LA for a little bit. They saw the system and then they pretty much took all their knowledge, brought it back to upstate New York. So they're making films that are low budget, but they have a consistent team of people who can help them raise the money. And then they can do whatever they want. Right. You know, they're not bound by anyone. There isn't anybody telling them, you know, you can't do this because, you know, one of our backers is super religious, or, you know, we have to do this and that, and you got to get so-and-so's daughter in the film. No, none of that. We do what we want. Right. We make content for a particular audience, and they love it every time.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I mean, as an actor, I think this project has got probably this is a dream one for that, but it's very, very fun. But as an actor, I know, of course, you have to go on thousands of auditions and do tons of different stuff that you're just like, I guess I'm going to go into this room right now and I'm going to talk about Bounty paper towels. So let's go, you know, is there a time in like an audition when you were like feeling manipulated or persuaded to be a certain way that you, not obviously for this project, but just like in your travels, you know? Was there anything that stands out that you were just like, is that what they're asking me to do right now?
So I'll tell you this story. And I really, I'll keep like, you know, names out and stuff, but you know, I had this audition that came in, and somehow one way or another, there was a mistake that was made in my profile, because I grew up with sensory integration disorder. Mm-hmm. So which is like, you know, a light version of ADHD essentially.
Right.
And, but somehow in my profile that got put as like neurodivergent or pretty much like autistic. So I get this audition that comes in for a film about this kid who is autistic. I'm like, that is not
this
me.
Is not, I'm
like, you
drunk.
Gotta, yeah. And I'm like, you gotta tell them that like, I'm very sorry. There was a mistake in my profile. This is not like, I am not autistic and I wouldn't feel comfortable, you know, portraying somebody who has autism. And they send back, that's fine. What? Wait, so the film now is cool that I don't have autism. They want to see me tape anyway.
Yeah, we'd love to see your take on autism.
Oh, my Jesus Christ.
Like, you guys know this is what people get in trouble for, right? You guys know this is the problem, right? Like,
you're like, I don't know what you're trying to do with your film, but I'm assuming it's not with me in it. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
And, but like, you know, at this point you have the people who are casting me want to see me. The people who got me the audition want to see me. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I guess I have to do this audition.
Yeah.
But of course, I'm like, well, listen, I'm not gonna like play this up and stereotype people with autism. I'm gonna just play this as me, and you guys decide if you want to make changes in the script to work around me. But yeah, that was like probably the most friction I had with a film.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. That would be a lot. Like, this can't be right.
Oh, another one. This one's crazy too. I had this feature film that my friend had gotten me an audition for them, and the film had won a bunch of awards. So a lot of when I'm auditioning, if there's stuff that's kind of close on the edge of my range, I'll look at how good the content is. Like, for instance, nudity. Like, I'm open to doing nudity, but it usually has to be for a project that I like. You know, if the nudity is being done in like a good way, like an artistic way, or it's for a really funny gag,
right?
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Of course.
But this project, you know, it won some awards, so I was giving it a little bit of a leeway, because when I read the script, it just sounded super offensive. Mm-hmm. But it was written by a person of color depicting, you know, people of color. Like, it seemed kind of like the movie Crash,
okay,
but just a lot less artistic.
Right.
It just seemed like it kept all the racism of Crash without like having the artistic side. But this movie is winning awards, so right. I'm like, maybe I'm just a white guy that doesn't understand what's happening. And my friend got an audition for like a Karen kind of role. Mm-hmm. And she was like, they want to see me and they want to see someone play my husband. You want to just audition for this? And he didn't say anything too crazy, so I'm like, all right, I'll audition for it. I played like a light racist guy.
Sure.
And I did the audition and I booked it. So I'm like, all right, I'll play this role. Like, he's not too intense.
Right.
And I'm playing it alongside my friends, so it'll be a good opportunity for us. Well, then they come back to me and they say, hey, we made some adjustments to the script, so your role is no longer in it. However, we would like to just book you for this other role. So I'm like, all right. So I read the other role, and the other role is like this super racist white guy who is talking to he's in an argument with an Asian man who is like kind of threatening him with nunchucks. Okay. And the Asian man is written very stereotypically, and I'm being super racist towards him.
Yeah.
I guess the consolation is that he whoops my ass, and that's like, hooray, you know, racism is overthrown. I'm like, I don't really want to play this role. They're like, well, no, you're already booked. I'm like, no, I was booked for the last role, not this one.
Yeah, yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, it does sound, if on paper, as someone who's been listening to some of the older like blaxploitation films and stuff, mm-hmm. you know, there is that thing there where, you know, for some of the characters, also a lot of them done in the time of, you know, the 1970s and stuff. So like, you already have different ideas around what racism is or what's tongue in cheek racism, you know? So, but mm-hmm. a lot of them, you know, eventually blaxploitation was taken by, you know, actual black creators, and they, you know, are parroting their own idea of what this genre is. Right. So,
right.
But in that, reading it just on paper, I can imagine that you're like, Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah.
This is, how do I feel about playing this role? I know it's in good hands. You have to hope, right? That's the point, is the lead graders be like, right, this is in good hands. Right.
Maybe I was wrong. You know, I would love to see that film and see it be done incredible and be like, oh, I totally missed the point. You know, like I know people who have declined auditions for, say, the comedy sketch series, I Think You Should Leave.
Oh, sure.
Which I love.
So good. Tim Robinson.
Right. Tim Robinson.
Yep.
Yeah. And he's, because people just didn't get it. They're like, this isn't funny. It's like, no, you didn't get it. You know, you're not, that's not your flavor of humor. And the people who do get it, nail it.
Yeah.
So I just hope and pray that I just didn't get it, and the film is actually a masterpiece.
Yeah. Exactly. There is that thing where it kind of, I guess, I'm not trying to shoehorn it in there, but as I'm thinking about it, yeah, that actor, you know, if people don't know, I think they do, but like, you know, we were filmmaking and stuff like this very much in this, I guess. But if you don't realize, like, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, you get to read obviously your parts, and you try to discern, you know, the how films are being shot, like kind of what is this character, kind of you try to put it in your head and maybe how it looks and how it might be shot, but you don't really know. You won't ever really see it come together, to your point. Like, you're like, I would love to have seen the movie and then been like, maybe it would have just clicked. It would have been, you know, like an awesome, yeah, blaxploitation film or something where it's like, oh, okay, I can see with the tone and the context where this character meets and it justifies it. But like saving that, that's in the future. You can't know that. You just have to be an actor being like, man, I'm about to say some real fucked up shit to this Asian actor. And I really hope this is, and it's on you. Right. Like it's on, that's a very, it's such a push and pull of like manipulation or, you know, you're like, this is correct in the context. I'm not. Yeah. And you're committing to a project or something like that. I get why you would be little. Yeah. Taken back, hesitant, you know, like, do I need to do this? Is this what I want to do? Yeah.
And that's a thing that I love about film, but I also am cautious about with film. Mm. You know, with theater, it's like the actor's medium. It's just the actor on stage, and you do whatever you want, right? Yeah. Whereas film, you all you can control is what you do on camera. And you know, there's three storytellers in a film. There's the writer, there's the director, and then there's the editor. Mm-hmm. An editor can make a great performance shitty, and they can make a shitty performance great, depending on how they cut you.
Absolutely. Yeah, we don't need to bring up Superman. just in terms of how many cuts. Yeah. You're like, we want this cut. You're like, all right, guys, we'll see if that makes you guys better. We'll see if it makes it happier, like for you guys. But yeah.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Do you hear about the reshoots for Justice League?
So, yes, I think so. Some of them, but please fill me in because I've heard stuff around the Justice League specifically. Obviously, you know what I'm talking about, but hit me. Yeah, please.
Did you hear about with Henry Cavill and his mustache?
Oh, right. Fill me in on this, man. I feel like I heard something about this.
They did some reshoots for Justice League, and Henry Cavill was on. He was already on contract for, The Man from Mission Uncle.
It might have been that one or Mission Impossible.
He had a mustache.
Yes.
They were adamant about the mustache. He could not shave it. Yeah. And of course, he doesn't have a mustache. It's Superman. So they were like, can't you just get like a fake mustache? He said, no, it's got to be real. So they spent, Justice League spent $1 million CGIing a mustache off of Henry Cavill's face.
God,
can you imagine?
Sometimes big budget, dude. I mean, you're just like, and at the end of the day, some people still don't like that. Like, they're just like, they messed it up. They don't like it. They're like, and they spent $1 million to get a mustache off someone's face.
Yeah. Well, dude, I think like Zack Snyder, he has so much bad luck. I feel, you know, like people shit on him a lot, and sometimes I do as well, but you never know like what's going on in a person's life. Like, you know, Justice League, I don't think is a good movie at all. Right. But I mean, I think his son committed suicide while they were shooting. The whole thing with the reshoots, I mean, that's serious shit. And then the same thing with Army of the Dead. He made Army of the Dead and then Chris D'Elia got canceled. Mm-hmm. So they had to replace the actor with Tig Notaro and do reshoots. Like, those are major setbacks.
Yeah.
And then like, how can you make the film you want to given like just things that are completely out of your control?
Yeah. There's so many times where I give it up for like M. Night Shyamalan. Some people, they have such hard choices about their directors. Like, they see a couple of movies and they immediately start going like, he fell off. I was like, dude, just take the art in. And if you like it, you like it. And if you don't go back. But like, stop dealing with these judgments on, these are multi-million dollar, you know, organizations and productions where they're not all on one human being.
Yeah.
And it goes in and it taps and it hits and the editor and, you know, all of these things. I go like, if you liked it, great. we don't need to have a diatribe every time. It's like, you know, people are going, there's various stages and time and years over, you know, a film is being done. It's so tough. Yeah, you're right. People sometimes are very critical. They're just like, ugh, garbage. And you're just like, come on, man.
Right.
Like, I saw Justice League. And you're right. I have not watched it again. I believe I watched the Zack Snyder cut because I think that was the black and white, if I remember incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And being like, okay, yeah. I mean, and I've also heard some great stuff that people like that made great points of just like, it does make it better. And yeah, not to go down that rabbit hole, but it's that thing of like, hey man, you know, these are, it's art. It's just art.
Right.
Man. You can chop it up and cut it different ways.
Yeah. I think M. Night Shyamalan is a particular case, and I may be a little biased towards M. Night because he's a Philly guy as well.
I like M. Night.
But I think that he started off the jump so big, and I think people's view of him is what destroyed him, because people were saying, like, this guy's the next Martin Scorsese, and like putting him up with all the greats. So they put him in such a high pedestal that nothing he did after that could top the Sixth Sense. Yep. So then people use that as a way to just like trash him and bury him.
Yep.
It's like, dude, not every movie is a hit, and you can't always have like the twist that changes the status quo.
Yeah. It is, you're absolutely correct. It's one of those things where I'm like, just enjoy the ride. He's trying to do something different, and he is completely, I think now you have the thing of, now we're going down to this. This isn't a movie or horror, but it's like, it's a thing where you're absolutely correct. He got big on one. And yeah, I'm like an M. Night apologist. Like, I'm just kind of like, hey man, it's art. Like, it's just art. If you don't like his movies anymore, like if it's something, you know, you didn't like The Village and stuff, like, don't go see any more of his movies. Like, it's that, it's that simple. Take your dollars and go somewhere else, because it's very simple. Yes, he is sometimes trying to do a different thing. He is trying to get you. He's got a little bit of the, older film director, horror, you know, Hitchcockian sort of thing here, where he's kind of making a certain type of film. And sometimes that pigeonholes an artist, like you're working in a certain medium. And, you know, but I know that, like, I know that as a fan, right? And I go along for that ride. I'm like, cool, yeah, there's going to be a twist, maybe multiple twists, who knows? You know, that's kind of his thing. And yeah, Trap, not my favorite of his movies by far, obviously, but I'm still like, yo, The Village. Like, I still love, you know, let's not even get into The Happening. I like The Happening. I don't know why. I can't tell you. I think it's that I will always submit in manipulation from like, and persuasion from just like the zeitgeist and maybe a time that I saw that movie and my age. I still go like, I mean, yeah, it is super silly and in times, and you're like, what the fuck? And some of the writing, you know, it's a here. And I go like, yeah, but he made a movie. Remember, much of the point, like, you're walking into Popeye, you know, it's like, you're walking into plants are killing people. And he's just making a point about the environment. Like, you know, there's lots of stuff in there. And I'm like, if it's not rich for you, if it's not a rich thing, then fucking don't worry about it and move on and stuff.
Yeah,
no, it's not that hard. Yeah. So I'm okay. Let's, because I have a couple of questions for you about some great stuff, and then we're definitely gonna plug the old movie. But let's take a little break so that we can get ready for some cult questions, my good man.
All right.
Oh, cool. Producer and friend Neil Wood here. Brief commercial break. Hey, how you doing? This is Neil Wood, one of the co-owners of Drop 10 Media Network and who helps run Biggest Little Comedy. You can check out all the other stuff we do at drop10.com. We've got podcasts, live comedy shows, and so much more. Go over there, support your favorite podcasts, follow them, subscribe. We appreciate it. And we're 100% DIY, just a bunch of creatives trying to make it in this. And give us some feedback. We always enjoy a little feedback. Thanks. Oh, back in the studio. Sean Conway is here. Popeye is amazing. Popeye the Slayer Man. I'm super excited to see. But I have, you were nice enough to take some time out of your day to come and hang with me. And I do still have some wonderful questions. And I think we should start with a little bit. We talked about some persuasion and manipulation in our lives, things like that. But being in LA, and you shared a little bit off air, it's kind of wild that you had an interaction with your roommate that you were telling me about, and I would love to talk about it because it deals with I feel like I need the Church of Scientology. But So you were living very close to a Church of Scientology, I guess.
Yeah. So my first apartment in LA was right in between Big Blue, which is like this huge museum Scientology building, and this unmarked apartment complex that had to have just been Scientologists. Mm-hmm. The apartment was literally right next to mine. And then Big Blue is probably a block or two down. And when I first moved there, my roommate, who she also moved from Philly, she said, "Now, Sean, you're a very nice guy and you are very polite and you talk to people, but you could be manipulated by these people." So she forced me to watch the Netflix series on Scientology just so I was aware of them more than I already was. Like, I knew who they were, but learning more about them was literally insane. But I'll just break down, you know, I don't need to break down the series, but I'll break down my experience with the Scientologists.
Sure.
So I worked at a bar just like 10-minute walk away, and I would run in the morning, maybe like 8-9 a.m. And I would see all these people come out of the apartment in suits and dresses, get on this bus, and then they would, I guess, go, I don't know, to work or wherever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I go about my day. I would close out the bar. I would be walking home by like 1 a.m. And these people are getting off the bus. Mm-hmm. Like, where were you for, I don't know, 15, 16 hours straight? Did you take a break? I mean, this was like clockwork, dude. But they were very nice. Mm-hmm. They seemed, I didn't really talk to any of them. But then if you look over on Big Blue, there's like this whole street. I mean, it looks beautiful. It's a beautiful building. Mm-hmm. But my roommate always told me, I didn't test this, but she said, you cannot film. If you try to film mm-hmm. Big Blue, they'll follow you. Like mm-hmm. there's security all around. They'll hunt you down. And they'll make you delete it. They'll watch you delete it because mm-hmm. they do this thing. I forget what it's called, but
swirling
like, is that it? Or like so noisy interrogation? Like they're not abusing you, but they're like abusing you verbally.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the swirling thing is like, if you're an ex, member, like you've gotten out, they're the folks that call it swirling, that they will come and do some of what you're already talking about, but they'll do that. To anybody, it's kind of just like old style shaming. It seems like they'll just
yeah.
be like, you know, get in front of you and just kind of harass you a little bit verbally. That's yeah, they will not let you film. I've heard that before. That yeah, they're watching at all times. It's
yeah.
interesting that you yeah. Where did they go? What do they do all day?
I don't know, man. Like, do they work in the museum? I mean, there's a couple buildings that they have throughout LA. They have their production services, like where they film stuff, I guess.
Tom Cruise's apartment.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, then they have the celebrity building. So there's a spot that was like 10 minutes away from Big Blue where I guess they would house their actors who would then star in the films they would shoot at the production building. And the funny thing about the production building is, you know, it's got the big letters of Scientology. And then right in front of it is this tiny tiki bar that is not associated with a Scientology. But a lot of Scientologists I hear go to this bar. But it's also a public bar. It's like this cute, tiny little innocent tiki bar. It's like the funniest juxtaposition yeah. to this giant Scientology building. And then it's like cute little tiki bar. Hey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, how you doing? Hula skirts, anyone? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very interesting. I wouldn't even know if I'm like scientists drink, like Scientologists drink. I mean, they do.
There's yeah, right.
That says they can't, but seeing them in a bar, I don't know. There's not enough in Philly, as you know, coming from, you know, this side, like yeah, I would have never known if I met one. And I don't know if I've ever even seen anyone going into the buildings that they have here.
Right.
So
yeah. And they've also got this big poster on Hollywood Boulevard. And it's like, curious why so many people are becoming Scientologists.
I've heard about
that. Here's the website. Meanwhile, you know statistically that they're losing members.
Yeah, somehow.
But they're pushing hard.
Gaining money, though. That's the interesting thing, that their membership has been going down, but they've been playing smartly the money game of like, you know, we're putting money in other places. Like, we still are making money over here, but our membership is down. It's very, very interesting.
Crazy, dude.
And yes, I will see Mission Impossible, the new one. I will.
I mean, they're still great.
I can't. I mean, whatever. We don't, you know, Tom Cruise, I don't know to what extent Xenu is involved in your life. I don't know, but I would love to know. It's going to be very interesting to see his power, and hopefully his thetans are staying clear. So yeah. I appreciate him. Yeah, man. I mean, I get the, it's not the only, I mean, oof, cults or manipulation. I mean, Los Angeles, California. I mean, you want to talk about cult stuff. I mean, I feel like it was, you know, you had the heyday of like the burnt over district in like the 1800s over on the East Coast, when like religions were sorting out all kinds of different offshoots. And then like, as people moved west, they have so many crazy cults that went that way. Yeah. Or so many things. It's very interesting to see it, but I'm glad you haven't had interactions. That's a good thing. I think people usually just stay away from them in general. In my understanding of people who live in LA, they're just kind of like, yeah, you just don't talk to them. Like, it's
right. Kind of, yeah. It's, I mean, once you're educated, it's easy to like navigate, but I think that's a problem with LA, is that it's like a melting pot of damaged people who are looking for community, and you feel alone in LA sometimes. And that's how they get you. They get people from like the Midwest who are escaping bad households, and they don't have a family. So then like they get talked into these things. No one has vetted them to know what to look out for. And they just see this community. And they're like, oh, great. Next thing you know, all of their money has been spent buying books, trying to figure out how to levitate. And then you figure out you can't actually leave.
Yeah, we need more people into horror movies for this reason. I feel like horror movies are a great prep, especially if you get them earlier in life, to kind of like discern stuff. It's weird how it's a reflection on very, you know, manipulation practice in a lot of ways, you know, even down to the point of just like, no, Billy, don't go into that factory. You know what I mean?
Right.
And he's like, come on, babe. Come on, you know, there's nothing in here. Come on with me. It's all right. We'll cuddle up. You're just like, Billy's about to be fucking dead, dude. Billy's going to be dead. That's what's happening right now. Do not go in there. Yeah. There's that.
It preps you for the real world.
It does in a lot of ways. Yeah, it does. Yeah, I would love to hear some rules, because I can't, you know, again, even your roommate being like, you're a very sweet person. And I don't want you to, but I know you from stand up, really. I mean, I knew you were an actor. Like, we talked, like, I was like, oh man, that's so awesome. But you know, and you meet the crossover here as well. There's lots of, and my girlfriend as well, you know, comes from like the theatrical world, you know, and then started stand up and stuff. And, but like, if you doing stand up, you've got a backbone. Like, it's
one of those you hear things. Crazy shit. And like, you go through so much suffering.
Yeah, nothing towards actors. You guys also, especially theatrical world, if you're in theater, you've run that show, you know, 9 times a week, like sometimes twice a day, brutal hours. You have to hit the mark every time. If you're dancing, your feet are messed up. You know, it's brutal. Comedy all the other time is just like, you know, you have to have a backbone. So it's interesting that she saw. Yeah, you know, it was like, nah, this man is just very nice. There's a difference between, he's like, he's got a backbone. He's had to stand up in front of drunk buttheads and try to be funny, let alone just have their attention. So it's very interesting that way. So it's going to be interesting to see what you do with some rules, as one of the nicest people I know. But if you had to pick 3 rules as a cult leader that everyone would have to hear, anyone in your cult or whatever it might be, what would they be, do you think?
Well, I'm kind of stuck between what kind of cult we're talking about, like whether or not like this is a cult that I, Sean, would actually have, or like if I'm talking about having the best cult, you know, the hypothetical best cult, because I think to me, the first rule that I would have would be, I don't know if I have the correct verbiage for it, but just to be that whatever other rules come up, they're flexible so that I can continuously change that first rule.
Oh,
like, nice. You know, that first rule is that like, whatever I say, I can go back on pretty much.
Nice.
First rule is I'm the leader. You listen to me. I work, you know, pretty much like God rule. I work in mysterious ways. You can't question me. To question me is to question God, you know, like, and that I can, and I can change my mind because I am the leader.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I like, you're the kid who's like, and I wish for 1,000 more wishes.
Pretty much. Yeah. My first rule would be like the God rule.
Yeah.
Like I can do, smart. You know, I'm the leader. And no, like I would make the right verbiage of like, you know, trust that I grow. And as I grow, I become a better leader for you.
Ooh.
And that changes things for you. But no, it's always in your best interest.
Good PR spin. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
good. That'd probably be my first rule.
First one.
I'd have to work on actually writing it down on paper. My second rule.
Don't let anyone find that.
No, you're right.
No, keep that in a very secure area. Just like manifesto. What the?
Not trying to dig some stuff up.
Why would he have this?
Yeah. Surely he's not a cult leader.
No.
He's put a lot of thought into it.
A lot of thought. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the first rule. The second rule would maybe be to. I'm a very family type person. Now I'm talking about nicer rules.
Yeah.
I would probably have a wholesome one of like, you know, everyone in this cult is a family and we raise each other that as such. Nice. I feel like that's what kind of always goes wrong with societies is, you know, like Native Americans got it right with like everyone raised everyone as their own children. The minute you started owning shit,
mm-hmm.
it was like, oh, now I have to give this to my kin. Mm-hmm. Therefore I own my kin as well. You can't touch it. Now we have to fight for things.
Yeah.
That would be like my nicer rule.
Nice. That's good.
I will.
I think you're the first person to make a nice rule. Oh man.
I mean, really, it's just selfish for me because then I can, yeah. you know, pretty much have whatever control I want. You know, you're all my children. And my third rule for, I'll go with something a little more crazy. I mean, I fucking hate olives. So there's no olives. There's no olives at the cult. I can't stand them. That's like L. Ron Hubbard, like hating psychiatrists because they told him Scientology wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Like now you can't have psychologists. Well, you can't have olives now. And you can't have olives because they're evil. Not because they don't taste good.
Yeah.
But because there's something deeper rooted.
Yeah, the bar is remiss to tell you that we do not have olives. So your martini will be the way the good leader.
Yeah.
It. All right. That is. Yeah. Yeah.
That As makes the cult sense. Proceeds. I don't know if those are easy wash down cult.
No,
rules.
I mean, it's fun. I like to try to not preface it too much because you kind of. The cult or, you know, this hypothetical ridiculous, you know, thing kind of is meant to be just like your bit of psychology. Yeah. So usually people are like, well, wait, what kind of cult and stuff? I was like, just let the rules happen and then we'll frame it from there. Your cult sounds very nice. I mean, there's obviously,
that one rule could just change everything. You know, if I started to like olives, I can say, well, actually now a new thing has come up where olives are okay. And then I can, if I want to turn evil, I can do the sex thing and the money thing, you know, like I conclude that because rule number one has given me complete authority over your lives.
Thank you, Sean, for leaving room for growth.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. It's important that you're like, well, don't get ahead of yourself. That first rule, don't forget. That's great.
Yeah. And rule number one pretty much decides like if you're a good natured person, you're going to have good natured rules. But if at any point I get bad natured, then I mean, rule one. Yeah. It gives me whatever freedom I'd like. Yeah,
whatever you want to do. Still, I think I would join. I'm not a giant fan of olives. I'll eat one every once in a while, but it's not the biggest deal. I think I would get in. Let us know in the comments if you join. I mean, obviously you have to give it up for Sean, but look, Sean's a sweet dude. You can look at him. He's got our best interest at heart. Don't be weird. Come on, jump.
Yeah, don't be weird.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it, dude. You know Nike. You know how it works. Awesome, buddy. Well, I mean, dude, some great questions. We obviously hit tons of manipulation stuff, and, you know, I only have you for a little bit, I think. But so we're coming up here on the end, buddy. I mean, obviously, plug yourself. Plug the great project you have coming up with Popeye. I would love to hear about it. I know other people would, too.
Yeah. Popeye the Slayer Man comes out in the theaters March 21st. It also comes out on streaming the same day. We don't know where it's streaming just yet or which theaters, but we're on a limited theatrical release. So you're definitely going to get the big cities. I'm sure it'll play somewhere in Philly, and I'll keep everyone updated about that. That's pretty much it for Popeye. And then I would like to just throw in one other thing. I have a short film that I'm producing myself, and I'm a huge horror fan. It's called Last Call. It's about two bartenders who crack open this mysterious bottle that pretty much awakens a supernatural force that has no physical entity, but can pretty much manipulate them to kill themselves or each other.
Ooh.
So the two bartenders don't actually have control over their own actions, and they think that they're doing one thing and they're doing something else, kind of similar to like Oculus or Room 1408.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, 1408. Still another one I've watched probably too many times, and people will be like, you watch that? I was like, you don't. It's fun. It's a good, it's a crazy fucking ride. It's bleak as shit. But I like to think that he gets what he wants. And depending on which ending you like, you know,
yeah,
what you like to do, it's a fun one. It's definitely fun. And then John Cusack coming out of him, Samuel Jackson in that one. You're like, you're in this movie? I forgot you're in this
Always
movie.
Forget that Samuel Jackson's in it.
Just standing and delivering as he does.
Yeah.
And then, well, where can on any platform they just come and make sure they get all that info, buddy? They're just following you on Instagram or where?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can follow me. Sean Michael Conway is my Instagram. There is an Instagram for Popeye as well. It's just, I think it's just Popeye the Slayer Man.
Oh, yeah.
But if you go on Google, like there's constantly updates from like Bloody Disgusting, Joe Blow Horror, lots of different big horror websites. But yeah. Follow me on Instagram. I'm on Facebook under the same name. I'm on YouTube under the same name.
Hell yeah.
So yeah.
Follow Sean. And dude, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day and talking about some sweet horror with me, dude. I hope to definitely, I'm definitely watching it, obviously, and I'm looking out for you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, and I might have some other folks who might want to interview and stuff like that. So I'm super excited to keep talking about it.
Absolutely.
Thank you again. And yeah, we will see you next time, everybody. It's been another day in the cult here with awesome. Sean Michael Conway.
Oh. Thanks for having me on, Neil.
Thanks, buddy. Later. This episode of the Cult of Us podcast was brought to you by some Patreon shout-outs. Patreon shout-outs going out to shout-out Adam, Maxwell, Patrick. Oh, yeah. Thanks, everybody, for the Patreon. You get it a day sooner, so I hope you're enjoying it already. And we'll see you next time. You want to be a good person. We know you do. And that's why we're here to guide you and help. You can go to at Cult of Us Cast or Cult of Us and just subscribe, and that will fix you. This is your Pope, Neil Wood, and that will fix you. We know that you'll grow as a person and be better. Check out all the stuff at patreon.com/cultofus or dropdent.com/podcasts. You want to be better? You will.
This has been a Drop Tent Media production.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.